I have to congratulate you on a beautiful, beautiful film, visually and emotionally. This whole film, from start to finish, I love the inspiration for it. I was a huge fan of Kodachrome myself, so I died 1,000 deaths in 2010. How did this project come to you? And then, because this is, we've got the great allegory here, but we cannot escape the fact that we are talking about Kodachrome, a very visual medium, with the truth that comes out in the true colors and the lighting, which you and Alan just have exquisitely explored with your visual tonal bandwidth here. So I'm curious how the film came to you, and then how you and Alan then approached this cinematographically to design the film.
Sure. So the film came to me, I mean, the script was sent to me as a new father. At the time, my son was 6 months old, and we had recently moved to Los Angeles for career reasons, and kind of grappling with this, you know, your artwork versus family thing. So when I read the script, I instantaneously took to it, and, you know, happened to be reading it with my son in my arms late at night, 3 a.m, after he wouldn't go back down to bed. So just started crying when I got to a certain scene in the film. I kind of knew I had to do this film, and that's what brought me to it. And once I got on board, I really kind of, you know, you try to find a spine in the film. You try to find scenes that can carry you through. And it was this idea that both, you know, along with the death of film and the death of the Ben character, there's also like Matt's character, Jason's character, was in this place where the music industry was moving from basically from analog to digital. Mm-hmm. And kind of like what this means in society and this time period that we're going through. So that's what really drew me to the film as well, this idea of moving forward and how do we, character-wise, it's like, I felt like, well, in order to move forward, we kind of have to let go of the past. But, you know, it's a perfect metaphor for, like, in terms of what we're, of photography and music and stuff, like, we don't want to let go of the past. A lot of us don't want to let go of the past. We don't want to move forward. And do we have to do it? It's this dilemma we find ourselves in. So that was really kind of the through line and what we want to focus on. And so visually, when me and Alan sat down, a lot of our initial discussions were based on reflection, like this reflective moment, and how we can bring reflections into the film.
Mark, you and Alan make the greatest use of windows and mirrors for that very purpose of reflection and duality and two worlds existing within one. And it is so exquisitely done. So I applaud you on that.
Oh, thank you very much. Yeah, that was one of the things we started off on. Also, you know, we had this idea to introduce all the characters through a pane of glass. So that's kind of how we intro them all through this pane of glass. So again, like, one, to kind of mimic the way Ben sees the world. Mm-hmm. You know, he has to put this thing in front of us, but also, you know, just to kind of show that when we start this film, there's no clarity involved with these characters. They're all kind of struggling. They're all kind of obscured with where they are in their life. So these are like these visual themes. Those were the ones that we were able to carry through the film. Another one we tried to do was to put, you know, Matt's character in frames, mm-hmm. So to speak, in window frames and door frames, or at best, you know, as much as we could try to stay tight, almost like he's trapped in the photo himself throughout this whole film. So we stayed extremely tight on him. We really wanted to restrict him and put borders and frames on him, representing Ben's photography and what that does. And then allow that to open up at the end once they kind of connect. We're as wide as we ever are with him. We see more sky behind him. We let him journey in the frame in these wider shots. So that, you know, something like that was a little bit tricky to navigate. And the final thing we did, which was, you know, the most complicated thing, was we thought, and I might be going on a little bit of a tangent here, but hopefully this will all kind of
come
together in some way.
Mark, I love this tangent. Keep going.
Okay. We decided that we didn't want to have Matt and Ben alone in a kind of clean two-shot until they've connected. So we kept them separate the whole film. Sometimes they're together in the same frame, but Lizzie's character would always be in it with them.
Mm-hmm.
With them. So it would be the three of them. But just the two of them, we wanted to keep them separate to kind of visually put a stamp on this this idea that they are so disconnected, you know. They're so disconnected, we don't even want them in the same frame together. And it got tricky on us when we're shooting a lot of the car scenes, because we ended up having it really tight, a little bit tighter than we might maybe wanted to be. But once you kind of see through this vision, it goes. But then I really feel like it pays off once they are together at the end, once they're on this road trip and they're together in Kansas, and you see them together a lot for the last, you know, 15 minutes of the film that Ben's in. You really get this sense that they've connected, and I think it you know, we're trying to work on a kind of subliminal level here, but we think that's something that pays off. So those are kind of the tools we use to attack. You know, it's good to always have some sort of guidelines to attack the film.
Mm-hmm.
Another thing we did was we tried to replicate, as much as they are separate and not seem to kind of together, we also wanted to shoot similar shots to kind of convey this idea that they are father-son. They have the same traits. They are, you know, there is bloodline. So oddly enough, I mean, we looked at tons of photography books. We looked at tons and tons of photography books and tried to get inspiration. But one place we found inspiration was from a painter, Alex Colville, and because he, you know, he has these really interesting shots, and often people's faces are obscured and it's on their backs. And we kind of really liked, you know, the subtext in the painting. So we tried to, you know, have this shot of Matt looking out the window, and then later replicate it later in the film of Ben looking out the window and have, you know, push in on Matt's back and push in on Ben's back, and this kind of idea that these two characters, you know, connect them that way, connect them visually through these shots. So that was our big blueprint, overall blueprint for the film.
Well, I have to tell you, your blueprint worked to a T. It is perfection. I mean, I love how you mentioned the frames, because, you know, when we first see them together, when they're going to embark on the road trip and Matt's sitting on the door, on the stoop, what do we have there? We've got all these oversized old broken picture frames there. Which I thought was a beautiful, I mean, I chuckled when I saw that, because I figured there would have, I knew with the character of Ben seeing everything through a lens, there would be a lot of framing, and you didn't disappoint me. I'm so happy you had a convertible, because I can just imagine, as much difficulty as you had with getting shots, individual separate shots in the convertible, you would have died trying to do it in an enclosed car.
No, I know. It was a little bit of a tricky one. The car stuff is always time-consuming and tricky, but it in the end, it worked out. I think it worked out okay.
It really did, and throughout the whole film, it was very evident, you know, Matt and Benjamin really are two peas in a pod. They are cut from the same cloth. The one pushes people away and looks at life through a lens. The other one pushes people away because he doesn't want to get close enough. He's on that record that just keeps spinning in one circle. And, you know, and you really, really maintain and build on that. But when you get to your 51-minute mark and you start with that monologue that Ed Harris delivers talking about, you know, the beauty of film and Kodachrome and the idea of artifact and seeing things, at that moment, your emotional shift just intensifies, and that's where things really start to explode. So not 9 minutes later, in the band scene, behind, you know, where Matt's trying to sign the band, that's when you really start intensifying and shifting, and you finally start bringing them closer in subsequent shots, and it is so powerful. Right in that hinge mark there, 51 minute to about an hour 10, you really, that's where you really take off and you send us into that third act that just explodes with emotion. So well executed. I can't tell you how well.
I hope people continue watching to get to that point.
Oh my God. It's like you're riveted getting to that point. I mean, it's fascinating watching these characters unfold, and we learn about them with Elizabeth Olsen, Zoe being the glue, the conduit by which they connect. Yeah. But I'm just saying, when you get to that point, that is like the heartstrings are getting pulled. You're really rooting for, you really start rooting for a reconciliation of some sort. And I got to tell you, when you get to Dwayne's Photoshop, that was it. I was in tears the rest of the film. You know, I want you to know. You know, how exciting is it for you as a director to actually shoot this film on film on the 5207 and the 5219 and use 35?
Yeah, it was pretty awesome, to be honest. I had shot a short film on 16 maybe 15 years ago or something, mm-hmm. maybe a little bit longer than that. And I loved it. I just never went back to it because, it, you know, it wasn't quite practical on a lower budget. So finally, it made so much sense for this film to shoot it on film, on 35. And when we pitched it, when me and Alan pitched it, and we got the okay, and we got tremendous support from Kodak, it was great on so many levels. Aesthetically, obviously, you know, you can just tell. I know people can say you can't tell, but
you can tell.
You can always tell. Yeah, you can tell. I think you know, digital images can be very beautiful, but you can tell. But what it did more so, and what I forgot, because when I used to dabble in photography and developing my own photos, and I kind of forgotten how precise that process is, how you raise the camera and you frame the shot and you wait and maybe you don't take it because you have a limited commodity in terms of the amount of photos you can take, and then you wait until you get it right and then you take it. And it was kind of the same thing on the film set. We had to get it right in camera. Our playback, we didn't really have playback, but our monitor was standard definition, so you couldn't rely on it to see the true image. So you had to get it right. So everyone on set was so in tune and so present and so in the moment on every shot. And you can hear the film rolling through the camera, and it really did something, because I shot my first feature digitally, where you literally shoot it, you press a button, you watch it, you shoot it again, you not worry, you keep going. In terms of shooting on film for Kodachrome, we just had to get it right the first time, and we wouldn't be seeing, you know, we had to ship the film out it was driven out to another city 5-6 hours away. It's Montreal. We'd see it 2 days later. So we had to get it right, and everyone, it just made everyone on in tune and on the same page, and that element was, I was not expecting at all, when we decided to shoot on film was for aesthetics, but what it did in terms of on set, was fantastic.
Do you think shooting on film has helped make you a better director in terms of your visual eye for what will work and what won't work for a shot, as opposed to digital, where the mindset is, well, if it doesn't work, you know, if this isn't right, if that isn't right, we can just do it again and again and again?
Yeah, I think there's value to doing exercises and just shooting stuff and going out on weekends and shooting stuff and exploring. But when you're on set and you're on budget and you have to do things a certain way, there's definitely the fact that we were shooting on film made me a better filmmaker, and that I had to be more precise. I just had to be. There was no alternative option. So in that case, yes.
Yeah, no sloppy seconds allowed in film.
No, exactly.
You know, you have the most incredible cast here, Mark, from Bruce Greenwood and Wendy Crewson to Dennis Haysbert. And then, of course, you bring in Ed and Jason and Elizabeth. I think Ed was attached first, but, you know, how did you luck out with this cast? And what I find interesting about this cast is because you have someone like Ed, you have someone like Bruce and Wendy, and they go back to the days of when everything was shot on film. Then you've got somebody like Jason and Elizabeth, who are so used to all of their work being shot digitally. So you have a nice blend of talent. So I'm curious what led to your casting with each, and then how their own experience with the different shooting mediums might have influenced their performances or how they approach the characters.
Yeah, I think we got tremendously lucky and fortunate. Ed was cast first, and it was just, you know, he was the guy I thought of when I read the script. So to get him, it doesn't happen very often. It doesn't work out that way very often. So it was that was awesome, and Jason came on board, and Jason's such a great guy as well. Just smart and understood what we were trying to do. A photographer, Jason's a fantastic photographer. He shoots stills, and he shoots on film all the time, so mm-hmm. He had an understanding of it and the process. He's really good. You have to check out his work. But and Lizzie, oddly enough, had shot on film a few times before. She had shot Marcy, Martha, May, Marlene on mm-hmm. film, and she had shot another one on film. So she was more used to it. I was kind of, you know, Ed had done it before. He had just come off shooting Mother, which was also shot on film. So he was used to it. I think Jason, it was something a little bit new.
Mm-hmm.
But he's such a film buff that, you know, he was talking to the guys all the time, the cameraman, trying to kind of figure it out. I remember I talked with Jason, and he really loved hearing, it's such a faint sound, but you can hear the film mm-hmm. the camera, and he really got a kick out of that. He said it made him, you know, more in tune, kind of what I was saying before, more present,
but mm-hmm.
it really sharpens you. Especially when you think of it as money. Think of it as money going through the camera. It's like, you better get this one. So they had all, you know, explored it, experienced it. They, no issues whatsoever. And it was, you know, they're all excited by it. And they all felt, because this film is called Kodachrome and it's about the death of film, that it should be shot on film.
Mm-hmm. How hard was it to get this cast aligned? Because Bruce is always working. I think I've seen 4 films in the past month that Bruce is in. You know, Jason's always working. Lizzie, you know, they're all always working. But for the stars to align to get yeah. all of them in one film, I know you have an incredible producing team. I mean, Dan Levine, I know him. We've talked much over the yeah. years. So you've got a great producing team at bay. But still, no matter how good your teams are, if those stars don't align for you to get this cast, So, you know,
it's patience, because we had to, it's a small film. So we were, you know, we were at the, it wasn't like we said we were going to this date, jump on or jump off. We had cast the film, and then we were at the mercy of scheduling for probably 8 months, from when we originally wanted to go. And then when we thought we were going to go, we had to end up pushing two more times to find this window, late August to early October, that kind of, you know, Ed and Lizzie had just come off a film, and before Jason was about to have his second child. So we had this window, and it was like very specific. And Bruce, you know, we had to, he could give us a week, but it had to be a very specific week, and we wanted him, so we had to adjust the schedule to make sure we were shooting his stuff during that week. Dennis, we were fortunate that he was shooting a TV series where we were shooting in Toronto, so we had to also adjust the schedule. You know, when he had off days there, we would shoot his stuff. So we were all very flexible to make it work with the cast that we had. But it is tricky. It's extremely tricky.
Oh. Well, I would be remiss not to ask you about your music. I mean, you've got Chris Beccaro as your music supervisor. Your needle drops are fabulous. But then Agatha's score also. Fill-in score, really nice touch. It never overpowers. It doesn't lead you. It lets you follow, because music is as equally important as the visuals here because of the very nature of Matt's character.
Exactly.
So
for me, that's what was, you know, dictating the musical choices was, like, I wanted to hear it. I wanted to listen to it through Matt's ears, basically. Mm-hmm. I wanted this music to be stuff that he would listen to, stuff that he would enjoy. And the more, you know, the more modern stuff, not so much the there's a few shout outs to Ben's music in the film as well, but specifically the Graham Nash song. But yeah, you know, Chris, I kind of discussed what I was looking for, and he was great providing, you know, ideas, and we were obviously on a budget, and we wanted to keep it 2010, because that's when the film kind of takes place.
Right.
So we wanted to keep everything in that frame. We're super lucky that Jason happens to be good friends with Eddie Vedder, so we got a Pearl Jam song that way. you know, still paid for it, but not, you know, not as much as it would have cost. And then Agatha was someone that I had worked with on my previous film, Copenhagen, like Alan, and also before that, my short film, I had worked on with Alan and Agatha on those. And I was struggling a little bit with music and called her up and just kind of sent her the film and, you know, asked for help, and she quickly got a couple of things, and she just got it right away, and I sent it to the producers, and they're like, yes, she understands it, this is great. And she worked tirelessly late in the process just to get everything in order and kind of, as you said, bridge those gaps and kind of, you know, guide us but not push us. So I'm thrilled. You know, in that case, it was like a working, it helped so much to have shorthand and previous relationship.
The importance during your end titles of actually having Steve McCurry's photos in there.
Yes.
You could not have done this without some of them. And to see them, it was just, my heart just exploded.
Yeah. So Steve, I had reached out to Steve pretty early in the process. And he was so forthcoming and generous with his time. And we chatted quite a bit. I wanted Ed's character to be his work, I would say, to be based off Steve's work, not his life, but his work. And Ed was in L.A. doing a play, and I asked Steve, Ed was in New York doing a play, and Steve had just come back from a film shoot, and I asked them if they could meet up, and they did, and they got along great. And then eventually I reached out to Steve and said, can I use your work, you know, for Ed's character's work? And he was very generous to allow us to do that. And I just think it brings a certain validity to Ben's character. We see some of it in the house when we're in Ben's house earlier, but I really wanted to, at the end of the film, show, you know, sense that Ben has been absent, and, you know, we know he's been absent, and we know he's been off doing this other thing, but I wanted to put a print on what this other thing was. So I wanted to say, like, you know, this is where he's been. This is the work he's been doing. And so it, Steve's work plays for Ben Ryder, Ed's character's work at the end.
For so much of us, Kodachrome is just like presentations and slide presentations in school. You know, it's like, it's a fun thing and family trips and stuff like that, but there's so many beautiful photos when professional photographers do it right.